Welcome, welcome, you sexy mojo you. We're going to get our groove on for the next hour or so and talk about relationships and dating. We'll discuss the keys to successful partnerships, the excuses we make, and why, as I've said many times on this pod, vulnerability is a superpower. So, listen up while I discuss with relationship expert Marnie Batista, host of the hit podcast, The Dating Den, what it's going to take to get you or your single friends out there and how it's being done during a pandemic. And then, when you think you've found your person, how to make that relationship awesome. I'll wrap things up on the back end. Enjoy. Marnie Batista, welcome.
I love it. I like mojo girl madness.
Yeah, you got to have your fucking mojo in line. By the way, as I just did, you can swear on this pod if you feel the need.
I love that. I was doing my little, I had a Friendsgiving and we were talking, we all went around and said we were grateful for. And I have this really amazing group of friends and most of them are, you know, 10 to 20 years younger than me. Yeah. But I was just saying like, you know, and my parents always had friends that were younger. But anyway, the bottom line, which is relevant to your title, is that it's all about our mojo.
Yes, it is.
It's really about like our authenticity is our energy and it's ageless and timeless.
Absolutely, it is.
That's why I'm so excited to be on your show because I believe in the mojo.
We are definitely going to talk about having your mojo in line and dating. And I've got a couple of personal stories I'll share and get your take on as well. Let me introduce you to everybody. I wrote out a lovely intro of you and your incredible background. I am so excited to welcome groundbreaking relationship expert Marnie Batista, who has helped thousands of single women find true love through her revolutionary approach to dating. And she's now helping them make a connection in the age of social distancing. How exciting. Ooh. Marnie has a process called Dating with Dignity that helps women create awareness of dating behaviors that can cause frustration and then provides a proven successful framework to change their self-concepts to ultimately attract quality partners and get the love they deserve, that we all deserve. Marnie teaches her clients to take responsibility for their thoughts, feelings, actions, to tap into their authentic self, have a positive self-concept, and create successful, loving relationships. She uses an innovative process that combines neuroscience and authenticity, which is something we talk about all the time on Mojo Girl Madness, to attract not just any man, but one who will be an ideal equal partner and a person with whom you can create a pathway to a life of meaning, intimacy, and personal fulfillment. She also has a successful podcast, The Dating Den. And in April 2020, she was featured in The New Yorker, sharing her insights on using Zoom to date during the pandemic, which we're going to talk about too. She has also appeared in Cosmopolitan, HuffPo, Men's Fitness, Glamour, and numerous other outlets. She's been a TV guest on Loveline. You filled in for Dr. Drew. That is so cool.
I did.
She was a guest on Dr. Phil and a radio guest on shows like On Air with Ryan Seacrest. So, Marnie, basically you teach women how to find the perfect man without sacrificing their dignity or professional goals and how to do that responsibly. Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's the perfect man for you because no one is perfect.
Exactly.
My dad used to say, no one's perfect except you and me. And I don't know about you.
I love it. So does your guidance apply to any romantic relationships? You focus on men and women. Does it also apply to same-sex partners?
Of course. I mean, of course it does. Like, I can't be in the like mind of someone in a same-sex relationship because I'm just haven't been in that relationship myself. And so my whole thing is like, I've done everything I teach. What I believe is that what we do is the linchpin to any relationship, romantic or not, right? Is self-worth, self-love, communication, integrity, all of those kinds of things. So yeah, it's all humans approach.
Fabulous. I think we should divide this into two sections because in any relationship, there's two humans and there's the spiritual child, which is the relationship itself. And I think everybody needs to love everybody in that relationship. You need to love yourself before you can really love somebody else. And you talk a lot on your podcast about self-love and doing some self-reflection. I had read about you that you have 8 rules to being single successfully, which in a sense is, you know, loving yourself and being happy with yourself before the guy comes in, before the partner comes in. So let's talk about some of those things we can do for ourselves before we even get into the relationship aspect.
I think one of the first things that is important to do is, and this is sort of like even before the first step, is to really check in, are you emotionally free from your past relationships? And I think that people think because they're intellectually past their relationships or they're strategically past their past relationships, they aren't at a place where they're emotionally ready. And the linchpin, like the key thing, if I were to distill it down, is can I create emotional safety for myself? Right? And because without creating emotional safety for ourselves, we can't be vulnerable. We can't really trust ourselves. If we can't do that, we can't do it with another person. So what happens is then we keep reliving those childhood hurts or even traumas in relationships from our 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever it is. And so I think that's why it's the first thing to do, because people will give out a bunch of dating tips. Right. And it's like, you know, that's not going to work if you don't really become emotionally free.
Yeah. You can't love somebody else till you love yourself. And you can't really connect with somebody else unless you're vulnerable. And I it's funny, I'm a TV director and I teach a class at USC Cinema. And I always tell my students, it's the same with storytelling. Anytime you want a connection with your audience, with another person, you have to learn to be vulnerable. And being vulnerable means knowing what's inside of you and being comfortable with that and being comfortable to share that with someone else.
Well, this is what's crazy, and I did not make this up. Brené Brown says it better than I could, but she always talks about how everybody admires vulnerability in someone else, right? Even when you're watching a great film or reading a great memoir or whatever, you're like, oh, like I feel so connected to this character or this narrator or this speaker in the TED Talk, right? But yet it's the thing that we are so terrified to do ourselves. We have such shame in our vulnerability. When I heard Brené Brown first talk about that, I was like, it's the thing we admire most. It's the thing we aspire to most and the thing we're most afraid of. And so that makes things challenging.
Yeah. And the fear, I think it really is. It's all based in shame. It's so funny. Even with this podcast, I get very personal on this podcast. In other episodes, I talk about everything from sex to my relationship with my parents, everything. And I've been told, oh, you're so brave. That's so courageous. And I guess it is, but it's such a shame that it is being brave to be able to share yourself. Because what is it about us that keeps us from being vulnerable?
Well, yeah, because, you know, most people are afraid that other people will judge us.
Right.
Right. It's that illusion of the self that drives so much. And so if we are worried about what other people think, or we have a whole set of shoulds or ought tos or standards that we're supposed to.
Killer.
Yeah. Then we're like, well, I want everyone to think that I'm X, Y, or Z. And, you know, social media and today's culture doesn't really.
Right.
Help that. Yet again, the paradox is who's getting famous online? People who are being authentic.
Yeah, absolutely.
For better or worse.
So don't dwell on your past relationship. Make sure that you are emotionally free from it. And I mean, for me, I've had a lot of relationships. I've had one marriage that ended in divorce. I do not consider divorce a failure, by the way. I don't think every relationship is meant to last forever. And I learned a lot about myself, you know, in conjunction with learning about him from that marriage. And I really needed myself to concentrate on the takeaways from that relationship before I could move on and start to recognize the patterns in all of my relationships. And, you know, the fact that I've chosen emotionally unavailable men for almost all of my life. Some of them have been long distance, which is like, oh, well, geographically undesirable.
Yeah.
And it does what you talk about on your podcast. It makes you feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, because if they don't get emotional, then you don't have to get emotional or vulnerable. And if they don't live close, then you really don't have to worry right now about what the future is going to look like, because they're safe out there and you're living your own life, but you have this person that's filling this slot that's somewhere else. And it's just a safe situation. Recognizing those patterns in yourself is a really difficult thing.
Absolutely. And that, I would say, like, the second thing I was going to say is, so once you say, you know, am I emotionally ready to sort of move on, then it's mm-hmm. look at the patterns.
Yeah.
Right. Like, absolutely. And I love that you brought up long distance, because when people talk about emotionally unavailable, it shows up in different forms, whether mm-hmm. it's like men that don't commit, men that you have relationships that are long distance, you have relationships with men that are addicted to different things.
Mm-hmm.
They're in other relationships. All those things are unavailable, man. It's not like he just comes up to you and goes, I'm emotionally unavailable. It shows up in different patterns. And so some ladies that I'll talk to have done one of all of those things.
Oh, me, me.
Yeah, right? And they're like, oh, did you notice that you're attracting men who are emotionally unavailable? So yeah, so then you look at the patterns, and what you reveal, then you can heal. And one of the things we were talking about this last night, I have one of my little social distance tables was my friend of therapists of different ages and years in the biz. And we were just talking about how so many times when someone goes to counseling or therapy, they're made aware of a pattern, but that doesn't heal it, just knowing it. So
right.
It's about then you have to rewire literally your brain. So just saying like, my internet sucks, just because you know it doesn't mean your internet's going to be better until you actually get a new provider or you get better wiring or you plug in or whatever it is. So information is not transformation. I did not make that up. I don't know who did, but I like to say
I like that. Information is not transformation. And it's so hard when you get in a new relationship to step back and think about it objectively, because you're so wrapped up in the feelings and the hormones of it all and the possibility of sex and, you know, fun times. And you don't, it's hard to then say, but let's step back. Let's look at the full picture of this guy or whoever it is and see if this is still part of my pattern and if this is going to bring heartbreak in the future. I mean, that's such a hard thing to do when you meet somebody.
It is. You know, I always teach clients to look at data, not drama.
Yeah.
Right. So to like figure out who you want from a place of like that emotional safety, from your authentic self, from a place of confidence. Most people mm-hmm. don't really choose. They get the men they get.
Yeah.
Right. You're not like, oh, I would like A, B, C, and D. Or your list of A, B, C, and D is based on, you know, characteristics, not values. And mm-hmm. so then you just take what you get, or you get what you get and try and change it into what you want.
how often does that work?
Yeah, like rarely. So when you know what you're looking for and you have a strategy or a process to collect data and have fun, but also be like feminine and engaged and flirtatious and be authentic, then you get to feel empowered in the process and you get to actually choose your partner, which mm-hmm. will then create a strong foundation. So when he's annoying because he loses his wallet all the time or whatever it is, you're not like, oh, it's over, you're so irresponsible, you know, and then you could just bag out. You're like, wait, was lose wallet on my core list? No. So can we work around it? Mm-hmm. So that was a lot, but it's a process.
Yeah, it is a process. So back to us taking care of ourselves. You also mentioned that when you're single, before you allow someone else to come in to your world, that's the time when you try new things, that you tap into your own creativity. How does that help you?
Well, most of us get into relationships to fill unmet needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is, especially if you are really uncomfortable being alone, you will continue, even if you're not in serial relationships, you will be focused on that. And so again, then you're sort of like in this chameleon rut, like a hamster wheel, just mm-hmm. trying to figure out what that guy wants. What does this guy want? There's nothing about who am I and what do I want? So I like what I call the dating fast, mm-hmm. which is a little cleanse,
mm-hmm.
whereby you are really focused on yourself
mm-hmm.
and date yourself. You're creating a relationship with yourself. You're falling in love with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a really important thing. one caveat. People will say, honey, I've been on dating fast. I haven't gone on a date in 10 years or whatever it is. That is not a dating fast. Mm-hmm. Denial, you know, trying to shove it down, compartmentalizing, giving up, try to convince yourself, making 27 attempts on Bumble. That is not a dating fast. A dating fast is truly taking a pause and practicing authenticity and flirting with life and putting yourself out there without the agenda of trying to get someone mm-hmm. to want you.
And enjoying being with yourself. I mean, if you don't enjoy being with yourself, how is anybody else going to enjoy being with yourself?
Well, you know? Yeah. And I think women are really good at bullshitting. I'll be honest, bullshitting yeah. themselves about this. They're like, I love my own company. I'm totally happy alone. I think the pandemic has really shown how we fill gaps with those things. And it yep. doesn't mean you're not happy. Believe me, like, I love you have friends. I love you go to the gym. I love you do all those things. When those things were taken away, I just think a lot of people started to ask better questions, which is, what is it that's going to give meaning to my life?
Right.
Not junk food all the time. Because if yeah. it's covering stuff up, it's junk food.
Yep. I had a brief chat with my doctor about, you know, she always checks in with me when I have my physical. How you doing? How's your, you know, how's your love life? All that kind of stuff. And her best friend was my divorce attorney. So okay. I asked her, how's Stephanie doing? And she said, oh my God, she's never been busier. This was like a month ago. She said, so many people are realizing during this pandemic, when they're spending all their time with their partner and they're spending a lot of time with themselves, that they're reevaluating everything. And they also realize, you know, it's really drilled into us right now. Life is short. There's an end game and it could be next month. So what the hell are you doing right now? And how are you feeling? And how can you best enjoy life? And frankly, that's the attitude we should have all the time.
I totally agree. This is an important thing, especially in the pandemic. Let's just pretend that the universe were conspiring for you, for us.
Right.
Right. And I know that's hard to believe or try on, but just try. Then you go, what if this is the worst, best thing that ever happened to me? How can I create power from this pain? How can I hold my grief and also opportunity and gratitude at the same time and really get clarity and then be in action? So I see people thriving and I see people suffering. And I think that there are people that I see suffering even when their job is at risk or they've lost their job or they don't realize they don't want to do that anymore. I have a dear friend who's a hairdresser and he's been doing it for 10 years. He's really amazing. And he realized through the pandemic that, you know, this isn't stable and I don't really want to do this. And what do I really want to do? And, you know, looking at doing something else and starting to go to school to pursue that, or another family member of mine who's in the entertainment business and in wardrobe and like, I don't actually want, this isn't, I thought I was supposed to do this. There was glamour in it. I don't actually want to do this. This is what I want to do. And it all came from pain.
Yeah.
So use your pain or a breakup.
Yeah.
Use your pain and create power.
I love that. Some of your other rules really resonated with me as well. You know, not just the date yourself and make yourself a priority, but to take the pressure off of yourself. I know that the funnest time I ever had dating was literally started the month I filed for divorce. That next year was the happiest year of my life because I wasn't looking for another relationship. I just wanted to have a good time and enjoy myself and go out with different guys and start to feel like a woman again and hone those feminine skills and start to flirt again. You know, I think women who, like I was, in a somewhat loveless relationship and certainly sexless, it just takes such a toll on your psyche. And it's so hard to put yourself back together because we take so much on ourselves. So when it's done, it's like, well, am I really worth anything? Who's going to want me? And God, just to be able to take that pressure off and go out into the dating world and not want anything other than to have a good time. It just makes all the difference in the world.
It does. And I think I always say, you know, it's like developmentally appropriate. You know, when you get after a divorce or a big breakup to like, especially if you got married young or you never really felt like you could choose or you never got to be, you know, your full badass sexual self. Like that's a really healthy developmental phase. And you can totally do that with dignity. What I like is, how can you date without pressure when you do want to find your person? how can you have that same ease and grace and fun and you're not attached to outcomes and results and you're curious and open and optimistic? If you can do that also when you're looking to mm-hmm. find a longtime partner, you are literally irresistible.
I agree. It's a really hard thing to do though, don't you think?
It is really hard because there's a lot of spiritual principles or a lot of things you have to believe about yourself and the world to do that, that don't just like come naturally, right? Like you have to kind of install that. But when someone can become rejection proof,
yep.
then dating, even when you'd love to find your person, can mm-hmm. be really, really fun.
And it's a different way of looking at rejection too. It's like not everything is meant to, you know, to even happen, much less last. And to be able to go out and know that you're just connecting with another human being. It's just, you know, you're just exactly. having, you're just having a drink, you're just having coffee, you're just having dinner and connecting with another human being. And if there's sparks there, then great. If there's not, then you had a lovely time. And that's
exactly,
I think, yeah, if you don't have that needy, desperate quality, it also makes you a hell of a lot more attractive.
Totally. I always find it so fascinating. Someone will say like, you know, I'm so pissed, you know, like this guy didn't call me back. It's just, if you take it out of context and you go, well, like you don't own him. You don't actually know him.
Right. Right. And he doesn't know you.
And he doesn't know you. And it would have been better just in terms of like integrity to not say I'm going to call you if you're not. But in the end, like, can you really, you know, you don't, he doesn't really owe you anything other than being polite. And sometimes they're not. But in the end, so what? There's lots of people we meet on a day-to-day basis that could have better manners.
Yeah. I mean, most people are so loath to have confrontation of any kind or put themselves in an uncomfortable position. So, you know, I've probably done it to guys and they've done it to me where it's like, oh, I'll call you. Oh, you know, next time, whatever. And I have no intention of doing so, but I didn't want to make that moment uncomfortable, you know, in person. And I know the guys are the same way, that they don't want to tell you to your face, I'm not going to call you again. And so if they don't call, they don't call. Move on.
They don't call. I used to say to guys when I was coaching men a while back, like, I'll call you does not mean goodbye. There's no language where you look up the meaning of I'll call you and it equals goodbye. But men just say it because they're afraid. They think they're supposed to. So
I think there was an episode of Friends about that or something.
Yeah, it's like, I think there was actually. It's just what people do sometimes. And here's the other thing for the people who are listening and dating. When you are honest, it will blow somebody away. Like in an amazing, like the right guy will just be like, whoa, you know, like if you say, I remember I was single and I was at this really nice upscale bar and I was talking to this guy and he was like, oh, I'd like to take you out sometime. And I was like, no, I really like you, but like, I just know for sure that we're not a match, but I'm really having such a good time talking to you. And he was like, oh my God, thank you for like being so honest. I just got a divorce and I'm so awkward. And I just would have been devastated if you would have said yes and then never answered me. And then we actually had a really deep conversation because he talked to me about his divorce and like his experience dating. And we had a really fun conversation and it was just honest.
And yeah, so it made an impact on you. You remembered it now.
I remember it like 12 years. James Beach. I remember the moment. And so and that's the fun. And that's what's really fun is, and not being a bitch, right? Like, are you kidding or whatever? Right. But like, because he was a nice person. He was putting himself out there. I was like, oh my God, it's amazing. You just low-key directly asked me out. That's amazing. So yeah, I'm all about honesty. When people say to me, Marnie, oh my God, what should I say? And I'm like, what do you want to say? Like, what do you want to say? And they're like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you could say that.
Yeah.
They're like, you could say that. I'm like, well, yeah.
Why not?
Why not? But check yourself, because if it's your little wounded child, don't say that. But like, if it's an adult version of you, freaking say it. So I'm all about integrity and direct communication.
I love it. The adult version of you. I think that's that's been a big part of my personal therapy, is not reverting back to the needy child that I was, and to be the adult version And the one situation where I'm most vulnerable to being that girl is when I'm dating. And it's actually been a while. It's funny that I mentioned, and this it totally feeds into everything that you've been saying. After I filed for divorce and had that happiest year of my life, I kept a rotation of three going. And my therapist even said, that's a good number for you. And that way I would never get too needy or desperate with anyone. And if somebody didn't work out, I still had a couple more and I was free to go date again. And it just kept me emotionally more in line. But after the first year or so, there was just this one guy that stuck. And he was supposed to be a weekend fling. He's 20 years younger than me. And he's upstairs right now, you know, over 5 years later. And we just clicked and we got vulnerable with each other. And we still do. And it's a beautiful thing. And you know what? We don't talk about the future. I think this is another thing that women do, too, is they start projecting into the future on date one or two or three. You know, what's the future going to be like with this guy, rather than being in the moment. And Mika and I, we never talk about the future. We just enjoy being with each other.
I will say this, that for some people, that what they want in the future is a viable conversation. So mm-hmm. if you're at a place in your life where you want to get married or you want to have children or you want to retire, I'm okay with saying on the third or second date, you know, here's what I'm looking for. What about
right.
you?
Right.
Because someone who wanted to get married or someone who wanted a certain thing 5 years later would be really frustrated. And that's why I always have everybody really look at what are your relationship goals?
What
is
want.
It that you really want?
Right.
And don't have shame about it. So if you're cool being like in the moment and seeing how it goes and all of that stuff, and you know that's your truth, mm-hmm. then that's your truth. And then you have this person who's on the same page.
Right.
And I think what happens is people get frustrated because the woman who's looking to do A, B, or C has a guy who's like, I really don't want to talk about that.
Right.
And that's not really authentic to her. So mm-hmm. that guy isn't her match.
Right.
So I think that is such an important thing. There is no shame in wanting something.
Mm, yeah,
and
absolutely.
Talking about it, because there is a person out there who is also looking for what you're looking for. So cool girl mentality isn't really cool. It's really about being honest about what you want and then communicating mm-hmm. that to the right person will stay. It'll be perfect for you.
Yeah. Do you find that a lot of women don't really know what they want?
I think most people don't know what they want, even when in a communication. You know, they'll say, I'm so mad about my person doing this. And it's so frustrating. They'll go on and I'll be like, okay, well, what do you want? What do you want him to do? Mm-hmm. And they're like, don't want him. I'm like, no, I didn't say that. I'm like he is a puppy. You want to train him. What do you want him to do? And they're like, I don't know. And they really have to think about it. And then they're like, wow, I can ask for that. I had someone just the other night say, I like this guy that I'm dating, but he texts me all the time. And it's like, I'm just not available sometimes. And it's just like kind of starting to get overwhelming and it's kind of turning me off. And I was like, well, did you tell him that?
Yeah. It's like, have you said that?
Yeah. Right. And I was like, so I know what you don't, she knows what she doesn't want, but what does she want? Oh, I'd actually only like him to text me three times a day or three times a week. Or I'd like him to just ask me out instead of texting, right? Mm-hmm. Like ask yourself, instead of complaining about what you don't want, ask yourself, what do I want? And then think about how could I ask for that? Because complaining mm-hmm. about what you don't want isn't going to get your needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And in relationship, especially with men, they need specific actionable items because they really do want to make you happy, but they can't read your mind.
Mm, I love that. Do you think that marriage is for everybody?
I think there are no universals of anything is for everybody. I think it depends on what you want. I think that I think it's a great question to ask yourself, mm-hmm. why do I want to get married or why do I not want to get married? My husband, when I met him after like a few weeks or months of dating, maybe it was probably 3 or 4 weeks, he was like, getting in the process of getting divorced. And I was like, would you ever want to get married again? He's like, no, I only got married this time so I could get citizenship. Mm. And we had been together for like 10 years, but they were both not planning on getting married. And then he said, you know, I only got married for this reason. And I was like, well, I know that I do want that one day. Mm. So would you be open to asking yourself that question? And he said, yes. And it was an interesting 5 years in the space of him deciding that he did actually choose to want to get married. And I think it's an important conversation, and there is no have to's. So get honest. I've had a client who thought she wanted to get married and her partner just doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so she had to really ask herself, why do I want to get married? What do I really want? What does that really mean to me? Can I get that need met in this way? So I think everybody gets to decide what's right for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I ask myself that question. I say, I don't ever need to do that again. And I don't need to. It's whether I want to or not.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I love sharing life with someone. I'm one of those women who says I love being alone. I'm never bored. I always have something to do. But I love sharing my life with somebody who's, you know, on the same energy level. And
yeah. I think that's great. I know for me, because my husband was like, why do you want to get married? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I really thought, I really had to think about it. There were a million reasons.
And what did you say?
They weren't mine. Well, in the end, this is what I said. For me, making a commitment means something to me. Because I know that having got one divorce, it would probably be easy to get a lot of them. So breaking up would be really easy. I just know myself, you know, like, fuck this shit, right?
Yep.
So that was number one. But number two was, and it was kind of funny, is I wanted to have a model for my three daughters about having a commitment because I got a divorce. So that was number two. And then number three was I didn't see myself. I didn't want to be 60 or 65 or 80 and be somebody's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I wanted my kids to have a stepdad instead of my mom's boyfriend. Having them say like, oh, it's my mom's boyfriend. This is my mom's boyfriend. And I was like, that just didn't feel authentic to me. It didn't resonate for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that we got married. And I know my husband is too. And then we created our own vows and our own. We had to really carve out what is our marriage going to look like that works for us, because it's a different time and we don't do anything that odd or unique. But we had to actually sit down and be like, so what does marriage mean to you? And what does that look like? What are the roles and responsibilities and expectations?
Wow, what an adult conversation to have. How long have you guys been married?
We got married in 2014 and we met in 2009.
Oh, wow.
But nice. We broke up after 5 years because he was like, I don't think I can get married. And I was like, what the fuck after 5 years?
After 5 years dating or after?
5 years dating, living together. It was just totally a shock to me. And we broke up. And we were apart for 6 weeks. And I mean, I was devastated, obviously. And also after about 3 or 4 weeks, I was like, okay, this is not meant to be. And that's okay. And I won't find him, but I will find someone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I just will, right? I've asked him this and we've talked about it. But I think in the moment where he went on a trip or something and he was texting me photos. And I wrote back to him and I was like, I'm so glad you're having fun. I'm not your person anymore. Like, I'm not your person. I'm not the person that you share the cool trip photos with anymore.
Good for you.
I know you want that person, but I'm not.
Whoa.
And you're not the kids person. So like, you can't do that. And then like, I think that was a turning point.
I'm sure. Like, he's like, wait, I don't want to lose her.
Yeah. And I was like, and then I think he also, I was very much like, and I'm moving on. Like, I'm probably going to start dating in a couple
and
weeks.
And it was your choice. So that's, I'm like, doing what you wanted me to do.
Yeah. I'm that replaceable. I'm like, no, you're irreplaceable, right? You are irreplaceable. I will never find you. And also, like, I know that I'm meant to have another person.
Right.
And then that was when we started to have that conversation about what is it that he was really looking for. And he was just so, he had all these dreams and maybe fantasies, which are very common, I think, for men of the life. What would a life I would have if I didn't have any responsibilities? Mm-hmm. He was like, I want to sail for a year. I wanted this for a year. I want to do that for a year. I want to do that. And I was like, well, wait, I never said that. You couldn't, or like, what would that look like?
Right.
Like, go sail for the year. I'll like sail for a few weeks and then I'll go meet you there. And then you sail and I mean, like, I don't give a shit. Like, Dream your dreams. Like, let's figure out a way. That was the beginning of that conversation of what would it look like. And then, then we got back together. And then he proposed to me shortly thereafter.
Isn't that great? You broke up only to decide that you wanted to get married to each other. I love it. Exactly. I love it. That's wonderful. You mentioned something about when you were saying what, trying to figure out what your wants were about your daughters. And I find I've had so many friends who've said to me, well, I don't want to get out of this marriage that's horrible, that they're not happy and that's not fulfilling them, et cetera, because I have kids and I'm going to wait till the kids turn 18 and are out of the house. Or, assuming they go out of the house at 18. But I'm just going to wait till the kids are grown up. And that always struck me. Because when my parents got divorced, I was thrilled. It was a horrible relationship. I mean, I didn't want to look at that all the time. And everybody seems to delude themselves into thinking that the kids don't know what's going on in an unhappy marriage. And it just seems to me that you're not showing them the model of what a good relationship is by staying in something that's not working. Do you have any feelings on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think life is short. I think, look, I am known for not believing in rules or absolutes because I think context is everything. I think generally speaking, you have to really be courageous and look at what is your motivation to change or not change. And if it's because of what other people think, right, or that you're concerned about your kids, I would ask some high quality questions. Is it that your kids are going to be unstable, that they're going to not pick you, that they're going to, like, what really is it that you're saying you're worried for your kids about? I will never forget the moment we were on vacation in Hawaii. My kids, I don't remember how old they were. I think they were still like maybe teenagers and maybe my youngest was like 14, 15, but we used to do this thing where like they'd stay with their dad in Hawaii for like a week and a half or whatever. And then they'd come with us. And so we were just kicking it on the beach and they had just come back from their dad's and they were like, oh my, I never thought I'd say this, but like you did such the right thing by getting a divorce from dad. You guys couldn't be any more different. Like you were the worst pair ever. I never thought I would say this, but I'm so glad you got a divorce. You're both so much better off. And I was like, yay, vindication. Just because, you're always, my kids have issues, of course, because of it. But yeah, that was a really good thing. But I didn't pick my husband. I chose him because he was default. He wanted to marry me.
The first husband.
Yeah. Yes. I remember we went out, we slept together like on the first or second date, and then he called me the next day. And I literally remember being, shit, wow, he actually called me back. Nobody called me back after we sleep together. Maybe I should like him. You know what I mean? It was so like, get whatever you get.
Yeah.
And our value, besides the fact that, he's not my person, if I were to use the same model that I use now and I looked at like who he is and his values, we're like just clearly not a match.
And
like,
what you really wanted at that point in time.
Yeah, I just wanted to get married. I just needed someone to say, you're pretty and I want to marry you. And I wanted a wedding and my mom wanted me to get married and have a wedding. And it was all very fun. And, and then it was over and I was like, well, shit.
Then the day to day starts and you're like, I got to be with this person all the time.
I'm like, I'm trapped in this apartment in Chicago. Yeah, it was not pretty.
I think that's more common than not, that hopefully less and less as the years go on that women feel like they need to be married and they need to have the big white wedding. And, I waited until I was in my 40s to get married and late 40s. And we were together like 5 years. And, I never thought I'd date again. Who's going to want to date a woman who's got a 5 in front of her age, And and I could not have been more wrong. And I think sometimes when you get out of stuff, you're like, why did I wait so long to get out of it?
Yeah, well, for sure. For sure. Courage.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many obstacles, though, to dating, to getting out of something. It's the fear. Most of it deals with your own self-worth. I'll date when I'm this, when I lose 5 more pounds, or I'm too old, I can't date, or I'm ashamed of my divorce or my, the body, the whatever. And I feel like a failure. Who's going to want me? And that's just so, and I know I've been there. I've done that to myself. And I see that with, you know, colleagues and friends, that they do that to themselves. It's like, oh no, I'm fine. I don't need to get out there. I don't. And it's like, no, you're not though. And quit making obstacles where there don't need to be any, you know?
Well, it's like settling for the backup life.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not how I saw it going down, but like, this is good. Like, I'm happy. We're humans. We tolerate a lot, and the feeling safe is the illusion that the pain of what we have is better than the pain of the unknown.
fear. So yeah. Speaking of fear, there's this thing called coronavirus. Yes. Going
around. Corona.
So dating during the pandemic, does it happen?
It 100% happens.
Safely.
It totally happens safely. I mean, it happens unsafely, I'm sure, depending upon your, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this a while back. I've been doing a ton of research, and people, when they're dating, they usually have like, oh, I'm looking for these certain values, and then this person is my person. And now with the pandemic, there's like another level of filters.
Right.
And one is, you know, how anxious are you? Right? How anxious are you around your comfortability around other people? Is a really big new filter. And it depends on your proximity to the virus and your financial stability. And mostly those are most of the filters. And so someone who's highly anxious and has also had financial impact is going to probably be less of a match for you today.
Right.
Maybe like a year ago, that person could have been a good match for you, but right now they're not because of the circumstances.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of look at, in dating right now, really looking at not only are they a match for you, like in your core values, but are they in a place where they actually can date and pursue a relationship because of their experience of the pandemic.
Right.
And there's no right or wrong. It's just, you have to look for someone who's got the same match. That being said, perfect example is someone who's got a lot of anxiousness and has had a lot of challenges is going to be more conservative. And then they could find another person who's feeling more conservative, and they might just be happy Zooming for 3 months and then maybe going on mass dates, and you know, they'll just have a slower pace, and that's totally okay. But someone who's like, I'm good, like I have no fear, and someone who's like that, they're just not going to ever progress. So you want to have those conversations at the beginning.
Yeah. Don't you think when I started thinking about your advice to people dating during the pandemic, I almost feel like Zoom, you said it's another filter. It's a great filter. If you're dating, assuming you and the person you're either fixed up with or you meet online are both feeling the same way about safety during the pandemic, and you are not going to get together in person right now with people. So let's make that assumption that you're going to meet strictly online for a while. And it forces you to actually have conversations with people. And I mean, I think that's great. And to actually see people on Zoom before you're even in person.
Totally. I think it's been great because people are actually having conversations. The truth is that there's a study that just came out that 40% of Americans say they miss physical intimacy more than emotional, spiritual, or mental intimacy.
Wow.
And 26% feel deprived of touch. Right? So people do want to connect. And I think that asking for the FaceTime or the Zoom or however you want to do that initially is great protocol. We've had clients who are asking for that, and guys will be like, I'm sick of Zoom. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, then do you want to do FaceTime? Do you want to do Skype?
Exactly.
Right? Like, and that's a boundary. And the guy who doesn't want to do that is not your person.
Exactly.
So I just want to say that, like, do not be, it's like, send me a picture of your boobs. Like, if you don't want to do that, there's nothing wrong with you. So, and then I will tell you that, again, this research that I've been doing, like 69% of the people who are using Hinge right now, which is an app mm-hmm. run by Match Group, they're actually thinking more about who they're really looking for. And 50% say they're no longer chasing after people who aren't interested in them. You know, 59% wow. of daters are considering a wider range of people as potential partners. They are fast tracking. 55% are fast tracking new relationships because people don't want to hook up. They want to find a connection. They want to find their person to go through this with. Mm-hmm. And so you can do Zoom. You can then meet social distance, wearing masks, 6 feet apart. And now with the prevalence of testing, you can decide what you want your relationship and your bubble to look like. You have the bubble conversation. You get a test. People are having conversations about health, right? Yeah. And now it's not just sexual health, it's your health in regard to COVID. And that's great that people are being forced to have those kinds of conversations now. And then you get a test, you say, hey, we're negative.
Yeah.
You can kiss, you can create your bubble, and there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And ideally you're doing this after you've already built up a level of trust, because then even if they get a test, you have to trust that they're staying safe since the test.
Absolutely. So that's why you definitely want to pace and you want to mm-hmm. have those kind of conversations. And that's what I think is so amazing is that, and I said this earlier about integrity and conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Like when people are afraid in society, you know, in the human condition, we want to get together, right? And so I think that yeah. if we become more and more comfortable talking about our expectations and our needs, mm-hmm. right? And there's no taboo about it anymore. There used to be a taboo around sexual health testing and health testing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not taboo anymore. Mm-mm. So, you know, it's great. And so you can have that conversation, and how that person reacts is going to show you a lot yep. about who they are.
Absolutely.
Which is amazing sooner rather than later. And so it's never been a greater time to date and create connection and practice honesty and build something lasting.
I completely agree. I mean, for my single girlfriends out there, now's the perfect time to date because you don't have to worry about, you know, sex right now. You don't have to worry about anything other than getting to know the other person and sharing part of this, you know, crazy pandemic life with somebody else. And that's exciting. You know,
there's so much possibility. So I always say, like, for the people who are looking for excuses not to date, this is a perfect one.
Absolutely.
And the women and the men that really want to move forward with what they want for their life, there's mm-hmm. never been a better time to create connection.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any do's and don'ts for Zoom dating?
I brought on a video like expert the other day to uh-huh. do some training with my clients. And one really great tip that he gave is that on Zoom, there's like a filter in the settings that's like, you know, look your best kind of a thing. So you use that filter.
Okay.
Use the filter. Don't use the screen that you use for your work from home meetings. Like a lot of people are putting up those screens in yeah. the background, or they're doing the like whatever. It just says, it reeks of like professional, and that's not casual and, yeah. and fun.
And it reeks of not being vulnerable. It's like, oh, I'm not letting you into any of my space.
Exactly. So just find a nice spot. It doesn't have to be, you know, perfect, but mm-hmm. create your Zoom date space.
Mm-hmm. And lighting is really important.
Get good lighting. Use the filter, you know, dress up. One of the fun things too we're recommending is that instead of just saying, do you want to meet on Zoom? You could say, you want to try something fun with me? I have an idea. And a guy will be like, yeah. What is it?
Who's going to say no?
Right? So, you know, let's meet on Zoom. I have this idea of something we could do on Zoom to get to know each other and just, you know, and then get dressed up and be like, okay, let's do a 30-second like scavenger hunt in our house. Three things that mean blah, blah, blah. And then you could just run around and come back and be like, I picked this post-it note because blah, blah, blah. And then you just have something to talk about. Because the problem is it just goes down to like, so how's the pandemic treating
you? Yeah.
How are you finding Match? Like, you know, so.
I love that, the scavenger hunt idea.
Play games.
Yeah, play games. How fun.
There's so many things you can do online. There are you know, there are online cooking classes you can take mm-hmm. together. Like, so when you say, I have an idea, do you want to try something fun? It's okay, I think, and perfectly fine in this context to have leadership mm-hmm. about the creativity on a date. I think that if your guy isn't doing it, instead of being like, I want him to plan the date. Yes, I know you do. But sometimes as women, we're just a little bit more creative and innovative on these things. So yeah. It's okay to take a little bit of leadership or say, I know that there's some really cool online cooking classes. I found this place and I've been really wanting to try it.
Yeah.
You know, like throw the softball. And yes. Then he can be like, yeah, great. Well, let me look on that website and we could do that.
Yeah, well,
that
let me know fun. How it goes.
Exactly. So show some leadership and have fun.
Yeah. What are the risks of Zoom dating?
The risks of Zoom dating are just the same risks that there's always been, which mm-hmm. is this what I call pseudo intimacy, mm-hmm. Which is that you just keep FaceTiming.
Yeah.
It doesn't progress, or you just keep texting. Or I've seen guys be like, oh yeah, let's do that Zoom date. And then like an hour before, oh, you know, I really can't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they just keep texting. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. The other thing is I've had clients talk about the guy will be like, well, let's just do it now. Like, I'll just FaceTime you. And they're like, wait, I'm like at the gym, you know, yeah. And I'm sweaty and gross. Or they've gotten ready for a Zoom date and the guy's like out walking his dog and he hasn't shaved or washed his hair in 3 days. You know, so
these are signs,
but also they don't get it. Right. So yeah. It's just like saying, you know, hey, I'm super excited for our date at, you know, 6 mm-hmm. and I'm getting my girl on and, you know, I just kind of like letting them know that, you know, you got a plan. So that can be a problem is if someone just calls you or they're wanting to be spontaneous.
I think we all know when we've been out in the dating world that you're going to get the dick pics. You're going to hear a guy say, show me your boobs, whatever. I cannot imagine the mistakes that are being made on Zoom these days. And I do think women need to know that it can be recorded from both sides because they can use a QuickTime or they can use something else to record what's going on. And I don't even want to know what mistakes are out there from.
Well, there's like other services. People can use Telegram. People can use WhatsApp. There's just like, mm-hmm. there's a million ways. But I will say, you know, don't let someone tell you, oh, I don't have access to that. That's bullshit. You don't want to date someone who doesn't know how to find some sort of video
right
tool right now. They're probably a scammer. So I will just generally say, if you have concern, mm-hmm. trust your judgment, because there's no reason right now in this technology to not be able to use. And most of the apps now have video built in.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. We've talked about having our own mojo in line and being cool with ourselves. We know how to date now during the pandemic with Zoom and all these other apps and then the socially distanced. To focus on the men, what do men want?
I think what men want is to make a woman happy. I think men want to feel appreciated mm-hmm. And respected, for sure, not nagged. Men want you to give them the space mm-hmm. to show up, mm-hmm. to step up. And they want someone who doesn't need them for their self-worth. Right.
Yeah.
Like if you're so needy that you need constant validation, mm-hmm. that's too much work for the long term. He knows that he can never fill that hole mm-hmm. no matter how much he does. And then he feels like he's inadequate and he doesn't want to feel inadequate. So get your shit together is basically
yeah.
it.
Right? Yeah. That's hard, especially after you've broken up with somebody. It's to, you know, because you want to know how they feel about you. You want to hear it. You want to experience it and to not be needy and to not be insecure about things.
Yeah. And it's like, you, of course you're going to have needs, but it's that, you know, we do a show where we, on the podcast where we analyze the Bachelor, Bachelorette. And so,
I love it.
It's so fun to talk about. There's such great modeling of having needs versus being needy. It's like, I need someone to protect me, to back me up, to have my back, to, you know, blah, 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 I deserve it. You know, it's like it's a little extra. So you want to make sure that you have the understanding in yourself of what it means to have needs versus being needy.
Yeah. Is your dating advice different depending on how old the woman is?
Not really. I mean, men are men and women are women. I think a lot of people in their 20s who listen to my stuff, I think would probably use different language because mm-hmm. it's just a different language.
Right.
But I've had women in their, you know, early 30s and late 20s use this, my own kids, and women in their 70s.
Do you think it's different dating when you're older?
Well, I've only dated in my late 30s and mid 40s.
Okay.
So I can't, right? So, and my clients who are in their 50s and 60s, it's the same advice.
Yeah.
It's the same process. I think knowing what you want and who you want and doing that process of getting what your deal breakers are, it's all relevant. Anything is hard if that's your attitude about it.
Exactly.
Because I've had people say it's hard in a big city. It's hard in a small town. It's hard being overweight.
Excuses, excuses, excuses.
Yeah. In my online group for the podcast, I asked a question the other day. What are some of your limiting beliefs about dating? And I'm too old. I'm too intimidating. My town's too small. All of that stuff are just your paradigm. And so if you step into all things are possible paradigm, then all things are possible. And that's why I say, I mean, honestly, like if you're in your 50s, 60s or 70s or whatever, and you have this great profile and these amazing pictures and we create all your assets in a way that's amazing, I promise you it's going to be great. Cause the guy's like, oh, look at this. She's hot. She's fit. Like I love her profile. Like she stands out. And if you were, you know, looking for someone older or younger, whatever it is, it's easy to stand out. All you have to do is be at the top 10% of the dating pool. It doesn't take much, really. And you just do if you do the work, you know, and you do that, then you will stand out because the men are having the same crappy experiences that the women are having. So when you show up like a grown up and confident and articulate and you know what you want and you have great communication skills, you're everybody's breath of fresh air. So just be that. Just be the top 10%.
I love that. And you mentioned standing out as a profile. What have you found through all of your conversations and research is say my girlfriends are going to go out there and get online in the new year and shake things up a little bit, which I hope they do. What will make their profiles stand out? What catches guys' eyes?
Well, so I've done like a bunch of episodes on this on our show because there's not like three things. So, but what I'll say is this, you need to have your internal, your mindset and all uh-huh. of that stuff, right? Because I have had people who pay shit tons of money to do a profile or get photos. And when they don't have the right, their internal landscape is askew, they will still attract unavailable men, et cetera, et cetera. So that being said, imagine for the sake of argument that you are confident, you are connected, you have great self-worth, you know, you're all that's in order. You want to have professional photos.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to be lifestyle shots, not headshots. You want to make sure that you are wearing feminine clothes. You want to make sure that you have clothes that fit your actual body type.
Mm-hmm.
So when we work with someone, we have them work with a stylist to make sure that mm-hmm. they're doing that. No prints. I don't care how amazing your friends tell you, you look in that one floral sundress. Do not wear it. I don't care. So no prints.
That's interesting. Why is that?
First of all, most people don't look great in photos in prints.
Mm-hmm.
And it also distracts from you.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking, they scroll through and they just see the floral dress. They don't see your face.
Mm-hmm.
So and, it's distracting.
And it also may not, you know, do your body service because it's not going to show the silhouette of your body as well.
Exactly. If you're a big busted person, wear a V-neck,
uh-huh.
Accent that. If you are a little heavy, do not wear a big loose, go get yourself fitted in appropriate size clothes by a professional right. because hiding your body is not helping you.
Right.
Wear sexy shoes. There's like so many things that people do wrong with their photos.
But
so
always do a full body shot, the
always,
lifestyle
yeah,
shot.
Always have yeah. yeah, always have at least
guys,
one full body
guys are
going
to want to know, just like we're going to want to know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And pick things out that flatter your image. So be informed about that. Get your makeup mm-hmm. done, get your hair done. You know, that all that is important. Mm-hmm. And then your profile should be a reflection of what your life is like together with this person. So I see so many profiles that are like, I am a independent, happy woman, you know, who's had the most amazing life, da, 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 and I'm looking for the man who will blah, 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 blah. And it's basically masculine, 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 job interview, and a guy's like, ooh, like, you know. So you want to be painting a picture. Men are really visual. They want to see what it's like with you, what life is going to be like. They want to see what you do for them, what he does for you, how that picture feels to him is going to be like, wow, this person's amazing. We always get tons of compliments on our profiles. Men love them. They stand out. So you don't want to be like, I love to dress up and I also like to go to the beach, blah, blah, blah. You don't want to say, if you're into drama and, you know, women who blah, 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 I'm not your person. Like, don't write your profile from like what you don't want.
Do you ever say what you don't want?
No, you don't. No, you don't need to, because you're describing the life with you, which is very clear about what you want. Mm-hmm. I had a woman I actually interviewed for my show who was like, I don't understand why these men that I keep getting relationship with don't want to be with me and are like, find my kids like a problem and blah, 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 blah. And just, you know, they never want to have a family. And I'm like, well, you talk about your kids in your profile, right? She was like, no, I thought I'm supposed to hide that. And I was like, well, no.
You don't reveal the big stuff down the road. It's be up front.
Like, talk about what's it like. Like, and, you know, on the weekends when we don't have the kids, we're like, you know, wine tasting and solving. And the weekends that we do, we're so excited to, like, you know, bring the juice boxes and the orange slices and cheer on our kids. She was like, oh, shit, really? So, you know, don't hide anything.
And you always tell women to use their own age, their real age.
I do. And also, some people are really wanting to make sure that they have to work with the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm okay if you lie on the little thing by a few years. You just want to make sure that you tell the person right away.
Yeah.
Hey, I know that I put that I was 57, but I'm really 61. And it's because up until recently, I was just getting a lot of 80-year-old men. And so I want to make sure I got 50-year-old men. So I just want to let you know I'm 57 or I'm 61 or whatever it is.
Absolutely. Being forthcoming, being vulnerable.
Being vulnerable. I beat that drum all day long.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That's so funny. To myself as well. And it really is. God, it's so true. Being vulnerable connects you with other people.
Yeah, for sure.
So is there anything that you normally talk about that you'd want to throw in? Any wise words of dating?
I think we've covered so much. It's been so good. I think the last thing that I will say is that everything is possible, really. You know, someone told me all things are possible and all things are not possible at the same time.
Huh. Right? I like that.
Yeah. And so you're in that moment, right? And be in choice about the life that you want to create. I think it sucks to have the default.
Uh-huh.
Because you get one that I know of here right now. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. And when you set yourself up to date with dignity, to feel madly in love with yourself, to feel emotionally safe, then you can get the kind of partner that maybe even you're afraid to dream of, you know, and that there is a process. There is a way to do it. I think people are so shocked when they come to me. They're like, wait, there's a way? I'm like, yeah, there's a way, you know, like sewing or working out or whatever it is. You just have to commit and then you figure it out and then you get your result. And that is possible. So don't let your fear get in the way of your biggest dream, even if your biggest dream is your biggest fear.
Oh, wow. What a great quote. I love that. Yeah. What's possible and what's not possible is in front of us. And the common denominator is you. So it's how you handle your experience.
Absolutely.
And it will lead to one outcome or the other.
Yep.
I love that. Marni Batista, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I hope we talk again.
Yes, this was so fun.
I guess that's it.
Okay, I love you. Bye.
I'm going to hit the stop button. Well, that was fun. Wise words from fellow Mojo girl, Marni. Thank you, Marni. You know, when it comes to dating, I really think it helps for us all to remember to just relax. Get over yourself. Get out of your own head. It's not that big of a deal to date. Especially now when you don't even have to meet in person. Yet. I mentioned how much fun I had dating the year after my divorce because during that period of time, I really only wanted to enjoy myself. And you know what? I did. And you know what happened? One of the guys I was enjoying dating actually turned into a long-term committed relationship of over 5 years now. As cliche as it sounds, it happened when I least expected it. I actually think it was because I had been dating a few guys at the same time that I was able to recognize that I looked forward to being with Mika more than anyone else. We weren't exclusive right away, which took the pressure off and allowed me and him, I'd guess, to have a more objective view of us and how we felt about us. Funny, we didn't even talk about being exclusive until I think we both had been exclusive for a while. We just enjoyed each other. We had fun, and we still do. That's what's important. My old dating motto is one you may like. It goes like this. Fill your stable, but only ride the best one. Or ones, depending on the quality of those in your stable, I guess, and what you're up for. Anyway, maybe if you're in the dating pool or just ready to dip your toe in, set a period of time where you're not looking for a relationship, where you're just going to have fun and practice dating. No neediness, no desperation. Take the pressure off. Make your goal to just connect with another human being. Ask questions, listen, respond to what you hear, rather than focusing only on what you want to say. Keep an open mind, too. Remember that old adage, not to judge a book by its cover. There's always something more than meets the eye. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to uncover what that is. If you're meeting on Zoom, Skype, or FaceTime, which you should be for a while now, there's really no pressure. And do remember that Zoom doesn't provide your personal phone number like the other services may. You really shouldn't be giving out your personal number right away. I know you know that. I just had to say it. Anyway, like I said, have no pressure. Your goal should be to just learn about another human being, to connect, maybe do some pandemic commiserating. It's practice. It should be fun. And you know, everyone gets nervous if they give a damn. Everyone just wants to have a good time, especially now. Most people get a little insecure on a first date. If you do, remember that's normal. Just try to remember that on any date, whether it be in person or on Zoom, your main goal should just be to connect. Be authentic. Be honest. Be you. And at some point in the first few dates, maybe get a little vulnerable if you feel comfortable doing so. Make eye contact. Listen. Ask questions and be genuinely curious. Also remember, and this is important, not everyone will be your match. You're looking for a real connection, which means both sides need to feel that connection. And you may not even find that every potential partner is looking for the same thing. If everyone was right for everyone, everyone would be in a happy relationship. No, you must go through the process of weeding out and finding the one or ones that are a good match. And if you think you may have found the one and they don't feel the same about you, I'm really sorry, but it happens. Move on. As the guru of my 30s, Marianne Williamson, used to say, if the train don't stop at your station, it ain't your train. Also, As Nike says, mad corporate quote alert. Just do it. Just do it. Just fucking do it. And then let me know how it goes. Okay, that wraps up this one. On our next get together, we have a relatively short episode to wrap up season one. Oh my God, can you believe that? Wrap up season one. It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to talking with you then. And remember, if you have any questions or comments on the season or any episode from it, send me an email at iammojogirl@gmail.com. That's iammojogirl@gmail.com. And please don't forget to hit that follow, favorite, or subscribe button on Mojo Girl Madness. It would mean a lot to me. Make it your little Christmas present to a fellow Mojo. Take care of yourselves, Mojos. I'm thinking about you. Happy dating. Love you madly. Mojo Girl Madness is produced by Morgan McDougal Productions. Make sure to catch Jackie McDougal's awesome pod, 40 Thrive, wherever you get your podcasts.